Episode 489 of Global From Anywhere podcast, running a global business from Asia's best hubs.
Welcome to Global From Anywhere podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight up actionable advice.
Ray is a CPA and co-founder of UniPro Asia, a Hong Kong-based corporate services firm specializing in company formation, cloud accounting, compliance, and payroll for e-commerce entrepreneurs and global founders expanding into Asia.
A Big Four alumni, PwC, Deloitte, Ray has spent the last decade building one of the GFA community's most trusted back-office partners, serving founders across Hong Kong, Singapore, and mainland China.
This conversation sits at the intersection of two things most e-commerce operators get wrong: corporate structure and financial compliance, and how both are being quietly transformed by AI and automation. Let's tune in. Hey, entrepreneurs, if you're serious about scaling your cross-border business in 2026, don't miss the Cross-Border Summit happening November 3rd to 5th in Chiang Mai, Thailand. Network with speakers and fellow advanced sellers who are already navigating AI tools, tariff strategies, and new market expansion. Early bird tickets available at 2026.crossbordersummit.com.
A happy Friday evening, and it's what, 8 p.m. Friday night for you, Ray? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I like this timing, actually.
Oh, you like it? Okay.
Yeah, evening is good for me, and it is morning time in U.S. I think it's 8 a.m. in the U.S.
Yeah, I call my dad on Thursday nights. I try every Thursday. And well, yeah, it's 8. Yeah, about this time I call him. And we talked yesterday. So yes, it's evening in Asia and it's morning in U.S. And it's afternoon in Europe and
good
Africa. So yeah, this does get a lot of... Of course, if you're in California, it's 5 a.m., I think. So West Coast U.S. is 5 a.m. So it's not the best time for them. But how are you doing, Ray? Everything is good in Hong Kong?
I'm good. Thank you for having me today, Mike. It's been a few years since we did the last Q&A session.
Yeah. So just for those that don't know, Ray Ning he's a partner of ours at UniPro in Asia and setting up Hong Kong companies and companies in all around Asia and even in Western countries to help business owners both in mainland China and Hong Kong as well as around the world from our community get set up and going. So we've had you on the show, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 times. We did it in person a few times. I missed the in-person ones, but where we, and today is just an update. I don't know. I think we haven't had this talk on the show since maybe even before COVID, so 5 years, maybe.
Yeah. I think it's 5 years already.
I think, I don't know if it was before or after the WASA protests. I don't know if I can say that because we also distribute this in WeChat, but the whole craziness in Hong Kong in 2018 and 19.
It was pre-COVID.
So we have a lot to talk about 30 minutes. And I think the first is, what are you seeing? We have, of course, this is English language show. A lot of people are, I think there's some Irwins in Australia and some people are in Americas or Europe's or nomads like me in Southeast Asia. What are you seeing? What kind of trends are you seeing West in Hong Kong and Asia incorporation? Are they setting up Hong Kong or what's been going on in the firm at UniPro?
From Western clients' perspective, I think over the past 5 years, there has been some changes, especially people worry about the different kind of scenarios. And yeah, I do see Singapore is getting popular for Asia headquarters and also for startups people. Many people doing e-commerce, they also move to Singapore. And you as well, you, Mike, also has moved to Southeast Asia. So I can see and quite a lot of the Western e-commerce owners moving their business into Southeast Asia. That's the trend.
Yeah, lifestyle has changed. I don't know how much to dig into that, but yeah, I came to Hong Kong a lot, but I was also in Shenzhen and other parts of China. But I think I, as well as a lot of others, did migrate to Southeast Asia. And there was always a lot in Southeast Asia. Even when I was in China, a lot of people were in Thailand, or actually Vietnam is really picking up for people living there. But I still think they don't register companies. They live in these countries, but like we say with the show, actually we're global from anywhere now. I don't know if you can see anywhere on the background, but people are setting up. That doesn't matter just because they live in Thailand or they live Vietnam or live in Philippines, or they don't have to register a company where they live, or at least not their main company. But I do feel like, I guess you're seeing it, but yeah, Singapore has really picked up, I think, over Hong Kong. You're seeing that too?
Yes. But at the same time, by the end of the day, the owner has to compare the... Of course, stability is very important, but then also they will also need to consider the pricing and maybe the living costs in Singapore as well. So overall, the cost in Hong Kong is still cheaper, no matter for the company maintenance and also the living cost. So once Hong Kong becomes more stable, there's been many situations happened in Hong Kong over the few years. But then it seems now getting more stable, then some people would consider to choose a cheaper option. So some people seems to be moving back again. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think there's two or three points. And it started over 10 years ago with the banking in Hong Kong. I think you and I talked a lot about that. And I was often in Hong Kong helping, working with you, opening companies and banks. But then they just made it almost impossible for foreigners to get a bank account in Hong Kong. But that has changed now, right? I think I've seen even people in groups talking about Hong Kong again because banking is working. And I don't know if you want to share about that, but is it getting bank accounts in Hong Kong now?
It's getting better than what it was in 10 years ago. I remember you and I had having quite a good time about having people registering Hong Kong companies.
It was crazy times.
Yeah. It was quite easy at the beginning. And then later, the reason it was getting difficult is because of the FATCA and also the FATCA coming first and then the CRS coming after. And it makes a lot of banks having many workloads on handling the compliance of FATCA. And then that's why when a client from America coming to Hong Kong to set up a bank account, then they say, oh, it's difficult because maybe they consider the cost of complying that would be higher. So then it will make it more difficult for our American clients to set up. But times has been evolving. Most of the banks has already implemented a lot of measures on handling the compliance for the FATCA and also the CRS thing. And that's why recently you see even from our U.S. clients setting up an account here, it will be smooth and it's not as chaotic like 10 years ago.
That was some points, definitely like FATCA, CRS. There was some other specific ones. I remember some guy, I think it was an Israeli entrepreneur, business owner. He cheated people by registering a Hong Kong company, getting HSBC Hong Kong, getting money, taking the money, closing it, and saying, oh, it's so easy. You just open a company, get a bank account, do things, and then nothing happens. And he messed, that was horrible, but he was somewhat true. Like you kind of said, the good old days was, Hong Kong's pretty nice. They dress up nice, right? I know you always are presentable. Westerners, like even me, I'd come in shorts and sandals and into HSBC Central. And I would just get a number in a line at the SME Center, I think on the sixth floor, whatever it was. Just go up. I just gave them my brand new documents of the company from the BR. and the CI, the various documents, like company documents, nothing, barely anything else. I don't know. I filled out the bank form, have some free coffee, maybe a cracker, and then I have an HSBC Hong Kong bank account in a day. They'd give me the PIN. They'd give me the PIN card, the passcode, and then they say, "Oh, maybe by tomorrow you'll have it." And then you log in, multi-currency online bank account, ATM card. Yeah, it was so good. I think it got messed up around. We were talking about such a long time ago, but yeah, like 2015, I feel 2016, and then they said FATCA, which is something about U.S. reporting of American bank accounts globally that our banks have to report. And then there's the CRS. I forget what that stands for, but some kind of reporting document stuff. So yeah. And then, but now there's like Airwallex is good. There's Reap Hong Kong. There's, I think they just got acquired. I saw an email, but there's lots of these I think that's what saved us. So are people getting bank accounts that are like real, or is it these online? Does it matter transfer wise or what?
Oh yeah, that's why, because of the chaotic times about handling the CRS and also the FATCA, and then a lot of fintech suddenly pops up because they use their technology to simplify all these things, and they grow very rapidly. And it seems, for example, Airwallex has been going for, I heard that, but I don't know, maybe they are going for IPO already, like growing very fast. And you also use Airwallex as well. It's been working quite okay.
Yeah, I like it. But they understand their user and they listen to their user and they add features their user wants, like multi sub accounts. One of my favorite things is you can have multiple sub accounts. HSBC, man. I was like, can I have a sub account? I don't know. You know what a sub account is, right? I want to have my main account, but then I want to have for different business projects, accounting. I want to have separate accounts so that I can separate revenue. And they're like, no, it's not. You have to basically open another company or open another bank account. I can't remember what they told me, but I still think HSBC does not let you have sub account. But with, I don't think it's just Airwallex, but a lot of these fintechs, no problem. You want another virtual account, just click add sub account. You get a new bank account number, and then you give your customer or your Stripe or whatever, you give them that bank account number, and then that money goes to that account and it's totally separate from the other account. And you don't need to register a new company. You don't need to open another bank account. You just go to Airwallex, you say, there's a drop down, you say add sub account, and it gives you a couple different choices. You choose under the same organization, same company, and then you just make another one. And then the cool thing is you could add different users. So you have different team members that can see it and check it and know what's happening in that one for that project. So that's one of my favorite, but it's also online. HSBC and the other ones have online banking, but I don't know. I don't know. You know some of those. Are they better now? I don't want to pick on them. Standard Charter, do they still have – is their online banking okay? I feel like those traditional banks online still – I don't know. At least
fintech is still much more convenient. You know, the onboarding is very easy. They don't care whether you wear sandals, shorts, shoes. You just fill in your information about the company. And then it takes 1 week time usually to get it on board. People may ask, what will be the money held under this platform? Well, basically, they has cooperation with, I think they signed some strategic cooperation agreement with the bank. Actually, behind Airwallex is also the bank, but it's just they have a platform for you to make everything easier. You have under the bank.
We also have Mercury. They don't support Hong Kong that I know of. They're mostly U.S. bank. But they've also sponsored some of the shows over the years, and they're nice. And the one negative, though, even with Airwallex and others, they sometimes say, like you just said, switches from DBS to Standard Charter or Choice Financial, from SunTrust. I'm just making these they'll just say our issuing, I think it's called issuing bank. Yeah, like you said, they're not a real bank. They can't even say they're a bank, but they're like a fintech on top of banks. So sometimes, I don't know, like you said, sometimes the deal changes with the issuing bank or the real bank. And then you got to update your bank account number, your routing number, your like, so Amazon deposits, Stripe deposits, customer wires. You got to tell everybody, don't send money there anymore. Switch the money to this new one. So that's the one kind of somewhat negative. Whereas like HSBC or probably a real bank, your bank account number will probably always stay the same and as long as you have your account there. But it hasn't happened that many times, but it is a pain in the butt if it does happen. But I think they've gotten a little bit more stable. But I think both of them did that to me. They're both like, you need to update your bank account from this one to that one. Or they give you some time, maybe 1-2 months. But they say if after this date, the money will maybe return back to the sender, things like this. So that's some of the negatives.
I think overall, if you are considering to just using it as a business operation, like trading is, for example, and it's not for wealth management. If you are talking about wealth management, you want to put, you make money and then you keep the profits in the bank account for a certain of time, then it's better to use a proper bank account because the fintech isn't hold a bank license. They all usually use a money transfer license. So that's the key difference.
It is true, and that is the right thing to say, but they're starting to have 3% interest at Aerolix.
Yeah, they're trying to become like...
I don't know if you saw that, but yeah, they have some of these interests now. So hopefully, you know, anything is risky, but I don't know exactly. There's a little bit more risk than, but I think it's not that much riskier, but 3% is not that much. But yeah, they're starting to have these. I think even Mercury and the other ones are starting to have these interest savings programs that you can put it in.
I
don't know if the other
banking license, maybe it's already on the way.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So then, is it different? What about? I think you're in a very unique because you're born and raised in Hong Kong, but you also spend time in Shenzhen and you speak Mandarin, Cantonese, mm-hmm. English. Are you seeing trends? Like, what about mainland Chinese business owners? Are they doing things differently? Is there just for listeners to understand, like, what do you see happening within the different groups of clients or business owners?
For Chinese clients, they are also trying to expand into overseas market over the years, especially these 4 to 5 years. The reason is the Chinese market is already very competitive and the people were thinking about, okay, the overseas market would help these corporations survive or at least to keep the employee, and because market is very competitive already. And then so many corporations trying to set up companies overseas, and the first stop is Hong Kong. So in terms of Chinese clients, actually, I think they would still prefer Hong Kong over Singapore in general. Yeah.
Which does make sense. And then how about Greater Bay? Is that still a thing? Is that growing? Or if you want to explain what Greater Bay, maybe.
Greater Bay area, huh?
I remember that was, I talked about a lot when I was there. And is that happening or still a thing? Or maybe even explain for those who don't know what it is.
Greater Bay Area, I think, is when there are several Bay Area, which is very strong in economies. Like, for example, in U.S., you have the San Francisco Bay, in Japan, they have a Tokyo Bay. And then, that was the idea, that they want to make a very strong economy using the Bay concept. So then Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, we have a Bay here, like the Pearl River. And then, so they are trying to build a similar concept here. And it's been good. It's been doing quite rapidly, actually. Like they have building a lot of infrastructure connecting the 9 cities here: Hong Kong, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, Dongguan, Huizhou, Zhuhai.
Nine
cities. Anyway, yeah, Zhongshan.
Yeah, yeah.
Zhaoqing. Wow. Yeah, and the population cover would be estimated like 100 million, more than 100 million. So what I've seen is connecting different cities using high-speed rails and like a metro type of high-speed rail. Like you don't need to book a ticket. Like you just walk there and then, okay, look at the time. Okay, next train is 2 minutes and then jump on it. Yeah, they are trying to connecting these 9 cities. Quite interesting.
Okay. It is.
And the car already, they have a policy like the Hong Kong car going off. If you have a car here and then you can apply for a license, and then usually in Guangzhou Canton Fair, you usually book the 2 license car, right?
Yeah.
But then they are now allowing some Hong Kong cars to just go there directly without.
Oh, that must upset those. They pay a lot, I heard, for that dual plate.
Yeah, but wow. they can only use the bridge to Zhuhai, that direction. You can't go to Shenzhen directly. You need to, if you want to go Shenzhen, then you need to cross the bridge to Zhuhai and then walk north.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's still valuable for the 2 license car, but then maybe in the future, who knows, maybe later it's no longer useful.
Okay. Just looking at my outline, I think tax, everybody likes to hear about tax. And I've seen it even in groups. People, obviously, there's this offshore elect. And do you want to give us some highlights about the tax situations and current situations in Hong Kong? About some people, a lot of people talk about the offshore income exclusions, things like this.
I think foreign clients, Western clients, basic concept hasn't really changed a lot. You still look into the key profit-generating activities. If these key profit-generating activities are all outside Hong Kong, then you are still eligible for 0 tax. I'm referring to profit tax, yeah. And
okay,
yeah, the logic is still the same. If you don't have a physical office here, you don't have employees here, you don't have local customers and suppliers here, then it still work. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. That's good to know. I mean,
it's still you're there. Yeah.
And about financials, of course, people love AI. And then also, what are some tips about for filing and keeping your financials and things like this? Like,
you mean accounting wise, right? Or bookkeeping?
Yeah, do they have to, how strict, yeah, the bookkeeping, accounting, and then maybe we'll touch on AI a little bit about that can help you, or if there's advantages or disadvantages on that.
For bookkeeping, I think many people already noticed they use the cloud-based accounting, or it's getting very common already, like the QuickBooks Online and also the Xero. These are the 2 dominant players on the market at the moment. And this is very convenient for people who manage their business in different jurisdictions. You can view your financial information lively using these kind of platforms. And Hong Kong hasn't really having the tax filing online yet, but they're approaching that. It's coming. They are trying to requiring for online filings, like no more paper. They're trying to pushing that.
Really? That's good.
Yeah.
Hong Kong loves paper, man. That would be great if they...
Yeah, I know in some other countries, in US is already online, right? Mostly. So yeah, in China is all online, but then Hong Kong is finally
Finally, Matt, that's the big news for those that don't know. Hong Kong loved printing and papers and statements and documents. So that's huge. That's good to know, man. That's an advantage.
It's becoming digital, So probably they will require to use XBRL, that kind of format, and they will support the online accounting software to integrate. That's the prediction,
Nice. And it's a little bit different, but as far as using AI, because I think you are special, you work with people both sides of the border, right? China, mainland China, even Hong Kong, of course, overseas. Do you notice differences in using AI tools, things like that?
Every day I'm using AI. I use the Grok.
You use Grok.
This kind of.
I'm Grok.
Yeah. This is very helpful. It definitely, you don't, for example, the test questions, if you ask AI, then you probably get the very good answer already. So AI would impact every industry, not just accountants. But then my attitude is to just adopt it. You have to accept it anyway. Yeah, it definitely will replace some of our works. But then, it will also...
I think we're all going to have to change every industry. But I guess I meant, or that's also helpful, but my thought was using tools, do you think Chinese companies are using it more or better or differently than like Western? Just thinking from your perspective... work, I think you get exposure to both, so I don't know if maybe you can't tell or know, but I'm just curious if you think Chinese companies use AI more than, say, Western companies, or it's the same.
I'm not expert on it, but from a user perspective, I think the major players would be US and the Chinese companies. And sometimes I also use a Chinese AI app to create a short cartoon thing.
Cool.
At the end of the day, it's usually about cost. The Chinese AI tool would usually offer a cheaper price. But on the technology and also the safety concerns, then probably is a different things. Yeah. But in terms of pricing, sometimes I feel like the Chinese AI app is doing also okay. But then, of course, if you need to, because there are certain restrictions in Hong Kong and then China for some AI tools, then so it depends on really what kind of tasks you're performing. It's hard to compare it directly, right?
Awesome, man. I think this has been a good discussion. And what do you see the future as far as company registrations and business services like within Hong Kong or in Asia or globally, even your perspective, hopefully good, but maybe honest is appreciated. I don't know. It's just curious to hear.
I don't know. I don't even think about it because it's just changing too fast. But yeah, definitely will be more automation and it's automation, but versus more like compliance and automation, they are fighting each other. The more automation or the more anonymous, then the regulatory body wouldn't like it. And then they will, even for the crypto thing, right? There are still regulatory body wants to come to scrutinize these things. So there's always a balance in there.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm in Thailand and a lot of my friends are into AI and they got invited to CMU, Chiang Mai University. And they said that this to professors and the faculty are very nervous because they have 6,500 students graduating like now and they're not finding jobs and they're very scared. And I had a deep talk with one of my really advanced AI friends last night here. He thinks it's going to be a very hard 10 to 15 years where society needs to restructure how everything works And he thinks that after that, society will adjust. And I guess the big question is, did human beings need to sit in front of a desk for 8 hours, 5 or maybe even 6 days a week in order to be able to eat food and live in their house? Where did that rule, where did that come from, right? Where did it come from? I think they're thinking maybe there's, I guess some people think universal income or some kind of a way that people don't need to be in a office 8 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week in order to, I don't know what the word is. I don't want to say survive or be a normal person. How is that going to look though if people don't have to work or people just work? Somebody even said, Elon Musk said that work will be optional. It's just if you want to work. You work if you want to work. You don't need to work. You can work if you want to.
I hope so. But the reality is...
Yeah.
Always hard to say, yeah. Yeah. We hope, yeah, this is depicting very beautifully. They're describing it very...
It sounds all good, but then, of course, they scare you with the government controls you, and if you don't listen to the government, you don't get the money from the government that you need to pay your rent, and then there's those scary futuristic movies that says Minority Report, I think, with Tom Cruise, and he's in the car, the self-driving car. I can't remember exactly, but he doesn't want to... Basically, they even make him look like he's guilty and he's not. And then he can't get out because everything's controlled by AI and the government. And I think he had to take his – oh, well, it's making it. You see that on my screen?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a very interesting time to be alive.
Yeah.
And we're all – I think everybody's feeling the same feelings. And I think it's normal. I think maybe when the internet came out – but they said this is even bigger than the internet, right? But it's definitely going to be – I think the world's going to be different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, it's easy to be scared and think scary things, but I think we should think good things,
yeah.
Hopefully.
I think the business owners can – for business opportunities, well, there's always reason opportunities. There are always two sides for everything. So let's just look at the positive thing and then
okay.
our life will be easier.
All right. Well, I think we're wrapped this a little bit over time. I got a little bit off track, but I think that was hopefully a fun conversation for you and everybody. What's the best way to find you, Ray? And what, of course, Hong Kong companies set up? What are some things people can, how can they find you and how can they get started?
Yeah, of course, you can also reach GFA and then GFA. We have been working together for many years and then whenever you have questions, you can reach out to GFA first, or if you want to talk with me directly, then yeah, Mike also has my contact, and then we can.
Okay, great.
Share, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you, Ray. Have a great rest of your Friday evening.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to join this show, and have a great evening. See you. Okay. Hopefully to see you in the Chiang Mai events.
Yeah, we have the cross border in November. That'd be great. It's going to be our eighth one, man. Eighth one. Can't believe that.
Yeah. I actually want to visit every year, but there was always a conference in the Shanghai crash the day. But I hope this year it doesn't crash and then I can join both events.
Okay. I mean, we're trying to do the same time, 3, 4, 5, or the core 2 days is November 4 and 5. So it'll be really cool to have you.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Awesome. All right. Take care.
Okay. Take care. See you.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody.
Wow. Whether you are choosing between Hong Kong and Singapore, trying to figure out offshore tax exemptions, or literally preparing your back end for AI agents, Ray really just gave us the ultimate global founder's playbook.
He absolutely did. It's so easy to get caught up in top-line revenue. But as Ray showed us today, your corporate structure and financial visibility are what actually keep you in the game. If you want to make sure your back office is bulletproof for the next 3 years, definitely reach out to Ray and the team at Unipro Asia.
We'll have all of Ray's links, plus a breakdown of those top three financial metrics he mentioned, right in the show notes.
And if you found value in today's episode, do us a huge favor. hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share this episode with a fellow e-commerce operator who might be flying blind right now.
Until next time, keep your structures clean, your financials clear, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Bye, everyone.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromanywhere.com. That's www.globalfromanywhere.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.